Thank you as well. The case will be taken under advisement, and we will move to the last case of this morning. Olson against Wexford Clearing Services.
Good morning. I'm Peter Schaefer, and I'm representing Mr. Olson. The NASB arbitration panel finally decided the arbitration between Mr. Olson and Wexford without hearing any evidence. We know today, without a doubt, that the panel made that decision as a final one because Olson filed a request for an amended statement of claim. That motion was denied at the end of July 2002 after careful consideration by the panel. And as a result, the evident ambiguities and uncertainties remaining after the April decision of dismissal were thereby resolved.
But you didn't argue ambiguities, which is one ground under the Federal Arbitration Act. You argued that you hadn't had a chance properly to present your evidence. And what I want to know, you put on page A33 the order of April 16th, which says at the bottom of that page, Wexford is hereby dismissed with a capital D from this arbitration. And you look at the next page and you see miscellaneous other rulings that apply to the other parties. The fact that there might be a mechanism long after that dismissal to ask the arbitral panel to reconsider its dismissal isn't the kind of thing that would make that a non-final order.
Well, Your Honor, we're not quarreling with the fact that the arbitration panel's decision was a dismissal.
Right.
The issue is whether it was final at that time. And that is the point, the factual point, which we're asking this panel and the Court of Appeals to review. Because of the wording of the dismissal decision in April, its wholesale disregard of the proper form, and then the subsequent several months later decision to deny the motion to file an amended statement of claim, having been done after careful consideration of that motion.
Well, I wouldn't stress this. Obviously, you know, if you file a 60B motion in a federal district court, I assume the district court would give it careful consideration before it denied it, taking into account the proper standards. So I'm not assuming anybody's being frivolous about this, but the question is, under the regime that applies to arbitrations, which is a regime that's designed to move things along, not get them all filed up in court and drag on forever, was your period of time to come to court triggered by this April 16th dismissal from the arbitration? Or because, you know, just because you might ask for another look, it's a dismissal. Would you agree?
Yes, but it wasn't final. It wasn't an award.
You say that. When you're dismissed, you don't get an award. When you're dismissed, you get nothing.
Your Honor, in the scheme, the procedural rules in arbitration provide that the only final decision in arbitration is an award. There are specific...
So what language do you think should have been used so it would have been clear to Wexford that he was out of the case and dismissed and this was final? What language should be there other than what's there?
Well, it's not so much the language. It's that this order, first of all, should not have suggested on its face that it was subject to amendment.
No, that depends how you read this. This order shall remain in effect because it follows this, it's on A34, it follows this list of four things about discovery schedules and this and that.
And it says other rulings. So it's not like it just, not like it's like it tails on to Wexford. It says other rulings, which suggests something other than Wexford, the four factors.
I agree. It uses those words. Of course, the only order that is referenced in this particular decision is the entire pre-hearing conference order. The other four-part ruling are called rulings, not order, and therefore the order would seem to be an entirety, including not only the procedural rulings as to the hearing, but also the dismissal order. I would also like to add, if I might, that in response to what else should there have been here, there should have been the proper designation of the signatures of the arbitrators. And I want, and that's a requirement for an order which is the only final order that's ever issued in arbitration, and one after which there is no 60B provision. Once there is an award, the matter is no longer reviewable or appealable within the arbitration decision. Once
right, you have but remember, you're talking about arbitral rules, not anything in Federal Arbitration Act, not anything in federal law. The question always for a court looking at this is, has the arbitral body, whatever it may be, NASD, AAA, whatever, finished with the case? And if this is, I mean, the district court thought, okay, this one person, Mr. Carlson, signing on behalf of the panel, you know, it's good enough for NASD work, I guess. Now, if there's an NASD problem, the question is it one that's subject to some sort of harmless error analysis or otherwise capable of being cured?
Well, it's certainly not in the record that this was acceptable to the NASD. This was the order that was issued by an arbitration panel. It's not as though the arbitration panel's order was then reviewed within the NASD for purposes of compliance.
On behalf of the panel, you don't have other panel members, as they are entitled to do, disagreeing.
Correct.
This is a unanimous ruling of the panel.
And I would ask, I would ask the court in considering that, and I recognize that mere technicalities should not govern here, but this ruling was an extraordinary one. Parties in arbitration contract to have an easy resolution of their claims and a hearing of the evidence. They don't contract for non-lawyers to deny them the right to have their evidence heard. So the technicalities here, I think, are important to demonstrate that, in fact, this extraordinary ruling was final. It's not something where the panel heard the evidence, listened to the argument, reviewed the documents, and then issued a decision which wasn't signed by everybody. This is different. This is extraordinary. It's not the norm in arbitration. And as a result, there was every reason to want to be sure, because going into federal court, there was a jurisdictional issue here for the federal court. Is this a final order? And we know now it was final because Olson went through the exercise of determining whether, in fact, it was final. If he goes to court based upon this ruling, he's subject to being asked the question, well, why isn't this order in the form required by the NASD rules? Why isn't it signed by everybody? How do we know that this is final? How do you take into account this reference in the order that it shall remain effective unless amended? Those are jurisdictional questions for the court, for the district court, which the district court never had to reach because they've been taken away through Olson's process, which was, I believe, timely within the context of the arbitration process. He filed a motion 2 months after the decision, and he certainly filed the application in court timely thereafter. So I think the court should recognize that there are jurisdictional questions here that ought not to end up in the district court, where the district court has to determine, was this a final order? What did they mean here? Why didn't they sign it? That's not what the district court should be doing. It should be deciding those issues which are either confirming or vacating the substantive issues under the Federal Arbitration Act. I see my time is up. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Bramnick?
Good morning. If it pleases the court, my name is Robert Bramnick. I'm appearing on behalf of the Appellee Webster Clearing Services Corporation. It's an honor to be here this morning. If the court please, I'm going to try to be exceedingly brief. I think from the briefs in this case, the court understands that on its face, the language of the order is clear, unambiguous, and final.
The problem is, I mean, since the NASD doesn't appear to have something like Rule 58, where when you're done with a case, you know, you have this nice single document that tells everybody when it is, plus the idea again, not like the federal rules, and there's no reason it has to be like the federal rules, that as each party gets finished up with the arbitration, that starts the clock running, there can be a certain amount of ambiguity. Is it your position that this case just wasn't litigated on the ambiguity ground, or that there isn't any?
Well, there's two things, Your Honor. First, it was not litigated on the basis of ambiguity because there was none. However,
so what's
in
your,
order to...
what's your characterization, then, of this later on, this later motion for permission to file the amended second complaint?
Your Honor, I'm constrained to tell you I think it was frivolous, and I'll explain why.
But do you think
why.
It was, like, trying to start a new arbitration, or trying to
yes.
reopen the old arbitration?
It was trying to start a new arbitration, Your Honor, and here's why. And you have to look at the history of the case as it's presented in the record, and I realize there's an issue that... parties have argued over, which is not clear in the record, of what the arbitrators said when scheduling the oral argument on this motion to dismiss that resulted in the dismissal of Wexford. We have an arbitration claim that was filed initially. There was a motion by Mr. Olson to amend his statement of claim. That motion was granted. Wexford had already moved to dismiss the first statement of claim. So Wexford was given leave to amend its or supplement its motion to dismiss. That second motion to dismiss was heard by the chairman of the panel, who granted the motion and dismissed Wexford. There is then another motion that's gone from Mr. Olson to reconsider on the grounds that the dismissal had been considered and ruled upon by the chairman of the panel only.
Right, that's just what's going on in the spring, right, before
that's,
the new
that's correct.
Chair person.
And so now, with Wexford's consent, we have a new chairman, we have a new arbitrator appointment who's appointed chairman, we have yet another motion to dismiss, we have another hearing, and the only reason for this is because the first dismissal order was signed and considered only by the chairman of the panel. So it's our position that there is absolutely no ambiguity here whatsoever if you look at the record of the case.
Can't you just to take the devil's advocate position for a minute, say that when you have all these dismissals and none of them really seems to mean dismissal, how do we know that the April dismissal is a real dismissal as opposed
all
to
we
the
have,
earlier one?
All we have is the language which says Wexford is hereby dismissed from this arbitration, and as the court has recognized, Judge Williams, in your question before, that the further rulings which are there are administrative in nature. They are things like setting briefing schedules, having discovery conferences, setting another pre-hearing conference. So you'd have every reason to understand and believe that with all kinds of scheduling for the remaining parties in a 3 or 4 year old case, that well, the order may be subject to some modification as we move forward in the case. There's absolutely no ambiguity in this order. And the clock began to run. Now, if we had a record, if we had a transcript of what transpired in all the pre-hearing conferences, we wouldn't be here at all because there'd be no question to the court.
But you're not, I mean, you know, it seems to me one could have argued that the 90 days began to run from that earlier dismissal. You're not arguing that.
We're not, because Wexford, when the motion for reconsideration was presented, Wexford agreed to and not joined in, but agreed to the motion for reconsideration to permit the entire panel to hear and rule upon the motion, which is why I find it curious that the allegation is made, or the argument is made rather today, that here we have something signed by only one of the arbitrators who signed on behalf of the entire panel, when the only reason we're here and the only reason we have that hearing is because the first decision was by one arbitrator only.
It seems a little odd in light of that you didn't just go ahead and put three signature lines on that, but anyway.
I understand, Your Honor. If you know, with 20/20 hindsight, I would have loved to have seen it that way.
And you'll make sure there are three signature lines in the future.
To the extent I can. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Schaefer.
Just a couple of factual matters. The first dismissal that was subject to the motion to reconsider, at the time there were only two arbitrators requiring, this was a three arbitration proceeding, there were only two arbitrators. The chairman unilaterally decided the case without conferring with the second arbitrator, and there wasn't a third arbitrator. So there was absolutely no procedural propriety to that decision. That was why there was a motion to reconsider. Second, I think it gives you a bit of the flavor of what you're confronted with in arbitration and the need to try to bring some clarity. In regard to the three signature lines, this order was not prepared by the parties. This order came down from the panel itself.
I understand. I'm just saying in the future, if it comes down as a one signature, of course, the two of you recognizing this was somewhat of a problem. There's certainly no rule that says you can't go back and say, can we get the other signatures added?
That would be suggesting then that it is not a final order and one that is subject to review. What I'm saying is that we went through the best available procedure here to determine whether or not this was a final order. We did. We now know that it was, and we're being penalized for doing it by taking that jurisdictional issue out of the district court level, getting it back in the arbitration where it's most readily decided, and then proceeding from there. And as a result, we request that Mr. Olson be allowed to proceed with the substantive portions of his motion application to vacate, because he was not allowed to enter any evidence at all in this case.
All right. Thank you much.
Thank you.
The case will be taken under advisement. The court will stand in recess until 9:30 tomorrow morning. Thank you.